Hey, hallo Giel hier. Ik heb al best wat webinars georganiseerd. En dit is weer wat anders. Dit is namelijk doen. Dit is beleven. Maar wel gewoon online bij jou thuis. 10 dagen lang. Helemaal gratis. Meditatie. Ja, een beetje flauw. Maar het is mij. En we gaan mediteren. Ik zeg we, jij en ik en heel veel anderen, wat sowieso heel krachtig is. Maar ook vooral de beste coaches die ons gaan begeleiden. Michael Pilacic, Jan Geurts, Robert Bridgman, Swami, Marjolein Berendsen, Marjolein van der Aar trouwens ook, van Mindful Minute. Ook nog een andere Marjolein, Lodrichs, Tonja van der Rijckie, Merel Teunis, Hielke Bonnema, Jerome Werens, met wie ik zo mooi hierover sprak, Willem Glaudemans, Wouter de Jong van Mindgym, Christine Bijnen, die doet dan weer juist zo'n hele manifesterende met muziekachtige manifestatie, meditatie. Marieke van Meijeren, die maakt dan weer een transcendente reis. We hebben ademexperts als Casper van der Meulen, Koen de Jong, Edwin Seleijs erbij, Tijn Tauber, Mr. Meditation, Arash Parshan, Jesse Jazz, Faya Laurens, heb ik ze allemaal genoemd? Ik denk het niet, want het zijn er te veel. Meer dan 20. En het is helemaal gratis. Live is gratis. En als je denkt, nou, ik wil meer informatie, of je denkt, ja, ik wil erbij zijn, dan moet je wel zorgen dat je de link hebt natuurlijk. En die krijg je als je je mailadres achterlaat via koekeroe.nl/meditatie. Dit wordt echt, nou ja, iets waar je bij wil zijn. Ook al kan je maar een keertje meepakken. koekeroe.nl/meditatie. So Sarah, why the dragonfly?
Ah, yeah, great question. So I live in Boulder, Colorado.
Yeah.
And every day I go up into the mountains. I have this luxury of walking out my front door and disappearing into some of the most beautiful mountains in the world on a daily basis. And I've been doing this for 20 years, and I thought I'd seen it all. I thought I knew every flower, every season, deep snow, hot summer, all of it. I thought I knew it all. But on one day in particular, my intention going up into the mountains was to release everything that I had just been through. A lot of it involved my own health journey, in fact. And to set intentions for what would come next. It felt like it was really time for me to let go and move on after a 5-year period of crisis. So This was a big day. I go up, I walk. It takes about 2 hours to get to the place where I was. And I still wasn't clear of, well, what is it? What is it that's going to catalyze this shift for me to where I'm ready to move forward? So I just stood in this meadow and I started spinning around like a child. I had my hands out, I was looking up, I was just spinning around, and I was just asking, like, what's next? And I got very dizzy. I laid down in this field and I looked up into the sky, and the dragonflies had hatched, and there were thousands of dragonflies above me.
Not only one, I thought there was one dragonfly. Okay.
Thousands of dragonflies. And here's the thing, I had never once on my walks in the mountains seen a single dragonfly. I'd never noticed the dragonflies in all of these years outside of Boulder, Colorado. And here on this day, there were thousands of them. And so I knew it was the universe knows it has to really knock me over the head in order to really get it, you know. So it sent me, God, the universe, whatever we want to call this magical aspect of creation that ties everything together. It sent me thousands of dragonflies to say, it's time, you're ready. And so I named my next step dragonfly before I actually knew what it would be. But in that instant, said, wow. Okay, I'm naming a dragonfly.
What a story. Sarah Glynn is hier. Ik ben op de summit, de Biohacker Summit in Amsterdam. Net even wat anders, dat zie je. En ik weet niet of je het hoort. Maar Dragonfly is het nieuwe ding van Sarah. Het gaat over nou ja, health and wellness. The beautiful thing is, and that's why I love it that you are here at the summit. Because it's not about technology, it's not about all kind of interventions, it's going inside.
Yes.
But that's also a bit weird thing to be on a Biohacker Summit then.
That's right.
You understand what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So why am I here at the Biohacker Summit?
Yeah.
With all of my non-technological ways.
Exactly.
Well, I think that alternative healers are the original biohackers. The midwives, the herbalists, the energy workers have been hacking human biology forever since humanity began. And when I spoke with the founder of this summit about my experience in June, I said, I love it all. And what about this whole entire aspect of biohacking that requires nothing, that you don't have to purchase a single thing. You do not have to, you can't buy your way into health.
No.
It's not to say that everyone at the Biohacker Summit is all about buying their way into health,
but
what the natural tendency here is to somehow, we're still kind of stuck in this notion that healing happens because of something outside of ourselves, that we need to acquire, ingest, find, seek out something out there that will ultimately heal us. And what I found on my own health journey and what I've discovered early on as a midwife when I was in service to women, as a yoga instructor, as an energy worker, is that all of that is important. All of those things, the diet, the supplements, the lifestyle, it's all important. But it really, unless we make these decisions internally, unless we really are empowered to take on our healing process, none of that works. So healing really does have to start as a conscious choice that we make.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I'm here to help people discover these little wins, these little moments where there was nothing else outside of themselves that actually occurred. It was just some spark internally that cultivated a new level of awareness, that gave them a moment of peace and relaxation, that energized them, that helped them see the future more clearly, whatever it is.
Yeah. Nice. And of course, and that's why it's working great here together, it could be an entrance to take a supplement or to use other stuff and then go inside, of course.
Yeah.
It's a combination. It's a holistic thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I guess there are different components to the sanctuary here at the summit. One component is this idea that healing begins within as a psychological process.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the healers that are in the sanctuary really are working with the nervous system and are working with the psychology. Another component is that healing does not require any technology or outside intervention.
No.
Right,
the body heals itself.
Yeah, the body heals itself.
Yeah.
So I don't want to collapse those too much.
No.
It's kind of important to pull those things apart, although they are complementary. Those are two value sets that are complementary to one another,
exactly.
That are both occurring in the sanctuary. And I'm a woman, so of course it's a little chaotic and very feminine, you know?
I have to translate some things because for me, I had to Google what midwife was.
Yeah.
Some vroedvrouw is that. And you worked a long time too with maybe you can explain what kind of work it was.
Sure. So actually, this is the perfect country to talk about midwifery because the Netherlands, the Dutch have for a long time understood that it's safe for women to give birth at home. More than most other countries and cultures in the world or developed countries in the world. So oftentimes here, an obstetrician will work hand in hand with a midwife so that a woman has the option to give birth at home.
Yeah.
And there have been many studies, but the outcomes are best in countries like this where women are empowered to choose the location of their birth. So I studied to be a midwife, a home birth midwife,
and
I worked as a home birth midwife.
Which isn't normal in the States.
In the U.S., it was illegal for a very
long
really?
Time. Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know. Okay.
And now it is still seen as it's getting better. I'm not going to, I don't want to make any polarizing statements right now. But
it's an in process, yeah.
Yeah. What I believe and what I've experienced as a mother, having had I had both of my children at home, is that the body the body is an exquisite, it's an exquisite thing, and it knows what to do. And there's really no better example of birth. You know, we're human beings. We're born to procreate and mm-hmm. to multiply.
Yeah,
because
yeah, exactly.
We're animals.
That's nature. Yeah,
right. It's nature.
Yeah.
So the midwife understands that the body is designed to give birth. That a woman's body is designed to give birth. And rather than trying to intervene in the process every step of the way out of fear, the midwife waits and watches
yeah.
and allows the birth to unfold in a very trusting but wise way. So,
because you think in a hospital and with a lot of extra help or maybe medicines or you say that can be the first trauma for a baby.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. This is very delicate because anyone who goes into the healing profession, whether they work in a hospital or they work outside of the hospital, they go into that profession because they're there to heal and help and support people. Mm-hmm. So I believe that ego can get in the way, and there can be ego on either side. You can
yeah.
have people trying to do things out of the hospital with big egos, and that's problematic. You can have people in hospitals, and that's problematic. That's more of a human problem. But I will say that as a group, anyone who goes into the healing profession is up to tremendous work, and I commend them, and I'm so grateful for what they're doing.
Yeah.
That said, the environment the environment of a hospital as a whole, it is... It puts our system onto high alert. So when you walk into an unfamiliar environment with bright lights, which are a necessity in a hospital, with sterile,
exactly.
It is sterile,
yeah.
It sends a signal to your body that there's an emergency. And so studies show there's what they call a cascade of events that happen, and therefore a cascade of interventions that are necessary to support the birthing process.
Mm-hmm.
So what has happened over time is that as more and more people go into this artificial environment to give birth, they've experienced more and more complications,
of course,
as yeah. a result of being yeah. in that environment.
Because of more stress and
Yes, because of the stress.
Yeah.
And they have come to believe then that birth is a scary, tricky process that requires the interventions. But when you just step outside of the environment, if you put a woman in a safe environment surrounded by her family, where her lover, her partner, her husband can
warm
hold
love,
her, stand
yeah.
behind her, get into the water naked with her, do whatever is needed to have this raw, intimate experience of birth, it goes quite well,
yeah.
actually. Statistics vary, but at a minimum 25% of the time is like 75% of the time you're fine without intervention, mm-hmm. 25% of the time you need it. But more realistically, in countries like this, I think the statistics are closer to 5% of the time an intervention is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So that means 95% of the time your body knows what to do.
Yeah.
So if we take this and we apply it to biohacking,
exactly.
and we apply it to health in general, it's the same thing. And that's really that second component that I was that I had referenced, or the idea that we need something outside of ourselves to heal, that we need all of these interventions to be strong and healthy and live long and to be happy. Yes, they can be helpful, but I think we've gone way too far
yeah.
in the extreme of relying on those things, and therefore creating this kind of story culturally that it's the only way.
Yeah.
So my goal is to bring people back to center, back to trust in their bodies, in the process of health and healing, and just a deeper knowing and trust.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the wisdom of yeah. health, is that.
Actually
yeah.
it's such a weird thing that we nowadays need people and talk like this to know that it's all good, it's already there, and it's going to be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
That's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is... This is really what it takes is just gentle reminders. This is how... I grew up in a very conventional... I didn't know what organic meant when I was 18 years old and moved to Boulder. I grew up eating microwaved food out of a can... which yeah. I know is lovingly prepared for me with the best of intentions, but
<That's>
was
<a thing.
laughs> destroying my body. But I had no idea even what it meant to be organic. And then I went on to be, you know, kind of a pillar in the organic health movement in the U.S. and like steeped, made this my part of my work,
yeah.
you know, steeped in the conversation of organic. But it took like my neighbor coming over and bringing me kale from his garden and saying, hey, I grew this organically, and me being like, well, what does this mean? And he got his hands and he showed me what it meant. You know, we worked in his garden together, and that was it.
Don't listen to Dave Asprey, because you don't have to eat the kale then. He's against kale or something like that. But that's another story.
Dave and I are going to talk, don't worry. Yeah. He's next on my list.
And share what you like, of course. You were talking about the moment Dragonfly started. You saw the dragonflies, and you mentioned there was like a crisis for 5 years. Can you maybe share a bit what that was about?
Yes, it was very scary.
Okay.
Yeah, it was very scary. The initial crisis was alarming. I was out in the world. I had built the first online education program to train midwives internationally. I was partnering with clinics in 7 different countries, sending students to do volunteer service.
It was
the
Rhythm
programs.
Of Life thing. Or later, or well,
yes,
yeah.
It okay. was it was a nonprofit organization and a private institution to deliver higher education, working together, both of which I founded. It was the culmination. It was like, I thought it's why I was here on Earth, was to do this thing. And it was the culmination of 15 years of studies and relationship building. And it was a huge investment for mm-hmm. me personally in every regard. And I also, I had 2 children at the time, which actually is even more important. I had these beautiful children that were depending on me. One day I woke up and my vision started to close in, and I went blind, and I was blind for a week. I couldn't see.
Wow.
And it was so scary, because I had all of this work that I was up to, all of these people relying on me in my world. You know, I had built this world of people relying on me, and I had this thing, it would be impossible that something like this would happen. And so even though I was steeped in alternative health, I ended up going straight to the conventional doctors. I went straight to the hospital, of course, to get all the diagnostic tests. And they were telling me things I did not want to hear.
No, because they told you it's not going to go away, or?
They told me it wouldn't go away.
Wow.
They were, they wanted to diagnose me with multiple sclerosis.
MS, yeah.
And something deep inside of me said, that's not it. That's not what's going on. So, and this, again, I always like to add the cautionary tale, because each body is so unique, and there are people who are diagnosed with multiple sclerosis that might potentially have a long-term progressive illness for many reasons. Yeah. I'm not an expert on MS at all. For anybody who has any diagnosis, it's scary. And oftentimes, you know, these larger diagnoses are umbrellas to describe, they oversimplify very complex things that are happening in the body. That's just kind of where we are in history with medicine right now.
Yeah.
So I quickly stepped back out of the hospital conventional medical model. I quickly said, I can't take that in right now. If I need to, I'll circle back to it later. But I think I should look at this. I should try to find some other perspectives.
Yeah.
So I sought out second opinions. I went to a naturopathic doctor. I went to an acupuncturist. I went to an energy worker. I talked to my astrologer.
Exactly.
I went up to the mountain and prayed. You know, I did all the things. I just took some time with myself, and the common thread that kept showing up was inflammation. And that's what felt right. You know, you like some things, you just hear them and they land, and other, yes, you're like, that's it. All of this I'm going to distill down into the word inflammation. And then I instantly knew what to do, because thankfully I'd had exposure to a lot of great ideas already. So I changed my diet. My vision started to come back, like immediately. My vision was restored as soon as I changed my diet. I eliminated sugar from my diet. And ultimately it was my nervous system was inflamed. The naturopath had said to me, you've had this progression of inflammation in your system over your life that you haven't been paying attention to, you've been ignoring. It started when I was really young. I had chronic ear infections. Then I had chronic strep throat. And, you know, they would give me antibiotics. They would remove my tonsils. But then it started progressing from my internal organs out into my skin. I was having all kinds of rashes. And then ultimately where it did lead was to inflammation of my nervous system. Yeah. A really important part of that story is that I was, once I was having the skin rashes and really also intense stomach pains, I did discover that I was celiac. So I went in and had testing and I eliminated gluten from my diet. So fast forwarding to when I was 35 and I went blind, I was already on a gluten-free diet. I was, you know, practicing yoga regularly, doing all the things I thought I should be doing. Yeah. And but when I heard this word inflammation, I knew that there was more. And I knew that my diet, like I was living on chocolate and green tea. It was green tea. It wasn't coffee even.
No,
but I was living on chocolate and caffeine. So I started thinking, well, what is it in this? Like, what could it possibly be? And it was the sugar. So I stopped eating the sugar. And I immediately started to feel better. My nervous system was able to become less inflamed. But then it took me years of therapy and deep dive into my emotional body to really, really calm my nervous system.
And this is a big question, but this is what it's all about, to feel and to heal. So besides the change of the diet and little bit of yoga, what helped you to communicate with your body, with your essence, actually?
Because this is when the real healing begins.
Exactly. But give us tools.
These other things, like this is where the biohacking comes in really handy. It's superficial in a sense. It gets us to a state where we can go deeper.
Mm-hmm.
It gets us, I believe, to the place where now we can begin to access. Because if you're all inflamed because you're eating sugar, or you're so nutrient deprived because you don't have the right supplements, or you're not exercising and moving your body, you actually are not physiologically in a state to be able to go deeper
into your nervous system. You're in survival mode.
So big praise to all of the work that's being done in the biohacking community and preventative health in general. But where the real healing begins, where the real magic begins to happen, is when you start to delve into the nervous system and to go deeper. So how do I do that?
Exactly.
Now I might start sounding a little weird.
No, not at all. You don't know my podcast. This is the thing.
Okay. I'm in good company.
Absolutely.
Okay. So.
Because, okay, no, I just would like to add, because it's so hard to make a connection when you aren't aware of the fact that there is no connection.
Completely. Yeah.
I
really love this question. I'm sitting with it for a moment here. There are so many teachers that I've had along the way and so much information out there. There's really good information out there. And I'm trying to kind of, I think it would be good to go through almost a linear progression of things. So I started, first of all, I signed myself up to work with a therapist, and I made this huge financial commitment to go twice a week for 6 months, which is a big deal. How is it here in the U.S.? That's all mostly out of pocket.
It's like investing in yourself, and sometimes you get some money from the government. But to be honest, those aren't the best practices. So,
So while I was, you know, it took me about 3 months to get through. Like, I would sit there for 2 hours a week and convince my therapist of how great my life was. God bless her.
Yeah.
She sat and listened to me.
Yeah.
And she would sit in front of me and hold space in this way with her. She would soften her entire being, and she would really listen to me with so much compassion. And usually when I would tell everyone how great my life was, they would listen to me in this way. They would start positioning themselves, yeah, you know, in some way about what that meant for them and da da da. But she just really held space with compassion. So, of course, then I was able to start to turn that inward and have more, like, to see my successes and my great life also through the lens of how much struggle there had been. So it took about 3 months just to get to, like, to soften within mm-hmm. myself. And once I did that, she started doing work with me. She started doing parts work with me.
Parts work?
Parts work, yes. Are you familiar with parts work? So I want to make sure that I give you I properly credit the founder of this. And I'm not, I forget names. So I think parts work is the next big thing in psychotherapy, by the way. So it's Richard Schwartz.
Okay.
And he has a book called No Bad Parts, which is worth reading. But there are now therapists that are being trained in this work. So, and also I did study psychology during my undergrad, and I've long been, I've read a lot of different psychological theories, and I've been really interested in this, steeped in this for a while, and kind of always curious about what's next. So when I say I think it's the next big thing, I mean it. I think it has big potential for the world. So he calls this inner family systems. It's where, and the idea is that on the extreme end of the spectrum, people who have experienced trauma will develop multiple personalities that are so fragmented that they are no longer interacting with each other. And a person who might show up as Betty one day, mm-hmm. speaking, looking, acting a certain way, and then their handwriting will change and they will become Bob and they will speak to you differently. They will, like, literally be totally different personalities all living inside of the same human
body. That's the whole schizophrenic thing, but in small, all people have it a bit.
This is right. Schizophrenia is a different disorder and different diagnosis, but the multiple personalities is a diagnosis that is exactly, it's an extreme version of something that we all have. So this, what Dr. Schwartz decided was that, okay, everyone has multiple personalities. Let's look at this. And the way that he positions this is that each one of those voices in your head are important.
Exactly. And you have to listen to them all.
You have to listen to them all. Yeah. So it's this very compassionate approach. It's saying, he uses the example of a family sitting at a dinner table. When you have a healthy family, everyone has a place at the dinner table. All of those different personalities make the family the family, and every perspective has value. So the parts work is about, first of all, identifying what are those different aspects of your personality that have developed over time, and learning to be able to listen and distinguish between those different parts of yourself. Yeah. That's step one. Step two is giving them each a place at the table.
Yeah.
So this is where the real fun begins. There's, like, we all want to pretend like, you know, Aunt Betty, who talks way too much, like who is, I don't know, whatever Aunt Betty is. It's awkward and uncomfortable in the family. We all want to pretend like she's not talking.
Yeah.
We all do the things to cover up Aunt Betty, right?
Yeah.
And this is actually also part of our personality, is that we, within ourselves, we also have our regulators. Like, mm-hmm. so we have the family sitting at the table, and then we have the ways we try to regulate the different members of the family. So identifying what those are, and then lovingly inviting every part of yourself to the table and giving that part value rather than diminishing it, pushing it away, covering it up. So I did this work for a couple of years and really got to know myself for the first time. And so now when all of those voices are coming, and so all day long, here I am, Sarah Glenn, walking around. I look like one person, but
all those parts
there's a lot happening. Yeah.
And because I once heard this comparison with a class, kind of the same thing. And And that's what touched me, that there's also the voice with the intuition.
Yes.
Who is not really yelling, who is whispering, but you should listen to that as well. If you are talking about those parts, do you see that as a, like a, an ego thing? And is there like a true essence or intuition? How do you, yeah, I don't know how it works in the,
yeah,
in this,
this
part.
This is the benefit of doing this work, is that ultimately you learn, you get to start, you get to choose.
Okay.
And you find your essence. So I do believe that the ego is all of the, it's not one, it's all of these different personalities.
Exactly.
These are formed in an instant in your life when something traumatic happened,
yeah,
big or small,
yeah,
and they develop to protect you.
Yeah.
So this is why they have value. They're there to protect you. All of these aspects of ourselves are allies. The problem is that when we don't listen to them, they get louder and louder and louder, and sometimes they take over. And then we're operating out here, we're showing up with this aspect of our personality, and then the rest of us knows that's not our truth, that's not who we really are. And we get into this whole conflict, it's the struggle every moment in the, if you,
yeah.
And so for me, I was, this work brought me back to my center so that I could begin to discern, okay, am I showing up, is this way that I'm reacting to this moment my truth, or is this some part of me signaling on the lookout that is protecting me? And then, you know, this is a very fast forward, this all happens at the speed of quantum speed.
Yeah.
I think we love the quantum because we get it, like there's so much that happens in quantum speed,
yeah,
right, including this process in,
yeah,
ourselves, this internal process. I'm but if I were to slow it way down, it's like I'm scanning my environment, I'm noticing all of the ways I'm reacting to it, I'm tuning into what each of those reactions has to tell me. I'm aggregating that information, and my true essence, the wisest part of myself, I call her the midwife. She is able to step in and say, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm going to take this, this, and this. You're heard. Yes, I'm listening. And here's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And then I'm moving forward with total agency, in control of how,
yeah,
I'm showing up. And when I falter a little bit, when I make the wrong move, I step right back in, I stay in the car, I'm like, okay, how am I reacting to this? And I go right back through the process, so
yeah.
I can recover. And
yeah.
And I think this, you know, when we use words like authenticity, I think that this is what we're trying to,
yeah,
get to. Yeah.
Love the way you explain it. Thanks. And this is like a regular question, so this is the moment. How do you train your intuition? How do you, like what we were just talking, how do you make that voice a bit louder? And in the end, the one, the thing that's deciding what to do with all kind of the ego parts, comments.
Yes. Oh, I love this question. There was a long period in my life where I did not trust my intuition. I had times when I felt like I would make a decision based on my intuition, and it would be disastrous.
Okay.
So, one part of my answer to your question is that training my intuition has required me to also believe in the greater good, to develop my muscle for trust. That anything that shows up as a result of my actions that wasn't as I intended is actually as it is intended in the larger context,
it
in
has
the
a
bigger
reason.
Scheme,
yeah,
of things.
Yeah, okay,
so trusting,
okay, okay,
and staying with it. And then celebrating the parts of me that did that thing to get me to that moment, that little crisis that led to the next breakthrough,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
that resulted in the thing I actually wanted.
So years after, we were just talking about the fact you were almost blind or below, that helped you to,
yes,
to
that,
be who
there was
you
a
are.
Huge breakthrough,
yeah,
on,
yeah,
the,
yeah,
other side of that.
Okay.
Not, yes. The other part of this, so there are three, I have three responses. One is the bigger trust. We have to have trust, because at the end of the day, no matter how perfect, how much we perfect our internal compass. Mm-hmm. There's still like a lot more happening than we can ever understand in any moment. So we have to trust mm-hmm. that even the breakdowns are positive.
Yeah.
The second is the parts work that I was just describing to you. This is big because it does get you to, it takes away, what it does is it helps you get into right relationship with all the parts of yourself yeah. that you don't trust. So you gain internal trust. So
I thought it was a dragonfly, but no, it's like
it's another. I think it really likes my hedgehog
pink,
sweater.
Yeah.
my flowers.
Yeah, because then you are aware of the inner voice as well. So yeah. the intuition. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So it's trusting the big picture. It's trusting yourself, and that piece of trust. You know, we talk about trusting ourselves a lot, and that's why I love the internal family systems. The parts work is that mm-hmm. it's a tool to develop trust ultimately with yourself. The third thing for strengthening intuition it's essential is somatic awareness. Because intuition is directly tied. Your body is is the signal. It is the thing. Your mind is not, intuition is not in the mind.
No,
everything
exactly.
I just described, that's all working working with your mind to tell it to be quiet.
Yeah. yeah.
but the thing you actually want to listen to is your body. So I also on my path, I spend a lot of time doing after I got through the parts work, I started working on somatic awareness. And the teacher that really led me there is Reggie Ray. He has a book called Awakening the Heart.
No,
I did just get stung.
Yeah.
I
no,
just
really?
Got stung, yeah.
Oh.
So we'll see how that goes.
So that happened, which was, it was a weird thing because we were talking about feel your body.
It was like, get right into your body, Sarah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's how you train your intuition. But then the further question, because you mentioned the third thing, the somatic thing, because that is for me, was the big opening to, because my mind-body connection was really bad. And
Yes.
That's what I told you. How do you know there's no connection if you don't feel a connection? So what kind of things you did to listen to your body?
Yeah.
Of course, yoga can help with that a lot.
Yeah.
Yoga is nice.
Yeah. This is also a survival mechanism. We dissociate, we detach from our body.
Exactly,
it's how
exactly.
we survive. And this is where my intuition was broken. As a child, I had a very traumatic childhood. I have something called complex PTSD. The greatest trauma in my childhood wasn't that I was physically abused. It was that I was isolated. It was a form of emotional abuse. So I spent a lot of time. They're showing up here with the I'm okay. Thank you for coming.
Yeah,
I'm not allergic, and it's already passed. Thank you for coming.
Yes. Sorry for this. So the emotional abuse, which is really underlying.
Yeah. So I spent a lot of time isolated as a child. I was spent a lot of time in my backyard
alone,
yeah. and a lot of time in my room reading books. I did have a dog. I did have a pet. So I'm still a big animal lover.
Yeah.
But what I did to really survive that time, aside from singing songs and reading books and playing in nature, you know, mm-hmm. building forts and so forth, I dissociated from my body so that I didn't have to feel.
No.
Also, my mother left me, and I was raised in a household with I won't go too far into my family history just because it's more
okay.
private, but
we all
I
get
did
a
reunite
feeling.
With my what I will say is yeah. I did reunite with my mother when I was 15
okay.
and we had many good years together. She ultimately died of cancer 3 years ago, and that losing her at the age of 71 again, it was really the second time I lost her, but it was fuel for the fire for me to start Dragonfly. To make sure that these types of losses don't occur, these types of losses don't become traumas
no.
in so many people's lives, losses related to chronic illness. But I digress. Going back to somatic awareness.
Yeah. So you were like me, detaching in your youth, so not really connected with your body?
Yeah, I had completely left my body.
Yeah.
Completely left my body. And I didn't realize this until I went blind. and so I went through these therapies months and months and months, turning into a couple of years of therapy. And then I was walking again in the mountain. And I was listening to a book by Reggie Ray called Awakening the Heart. And it is a profound book, by the way.
Is this one of the three books?
It's one of the three books.
Okay, let's go.
It's a game changer.
Okay.
Game changer.
Okay, the first one, Reggie Ray. And why that?
Awakening the Heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Reggie Ray has studied different forms of meditation. And his studies ultimately stem, his teachings stem from the tantric tradition of meditation. I'm sorry, the tantric lineage. And this is not the new age tantra, have great sex.
No, it's
tantra.
More like energy.
This is the ancient,
connection,
actual, real practice of tantra, which is all about embodiment. So as people were meditating, they were saying, wait, we can't leave the planet. We can't leave our bodies. So tantra, originally where the idea comes from, is experiencing ecstatic joy in our human, in our body. And that originally was about, it included physical touch and intimacy, mm-hmm, in your relationships, but it is about so much more than this.
Absolutely.
It's about being fully alive and Absolutely. Present in your body. So he took these ancient teachings and he develop these meditations that help you to basically go through your whole system, through your body, and learn to reconnect. You're reconnecting the wires to feel again. And ultimately, where it leads you is to your heart.
Yeah.
So it is somatic awareness. It is an awakening. And the main control center of all of this is your heart. So what we're calling intuition right now, I believe, is ultimately it's heart guidance, it's heart wisdom. And I think that, and the heart listens and it knows. So the heart is the center of the body. It's listening to all the different signals. So when I'm having a little sensation in my, the bottom, well, I'm having a little sensation over here in my torso. My heart is interpreting that, and I can trust what my heart has to say. My mind is also interpreting it. My mind is like, oh, there was a bee, it stung, da, 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 da. But when I just quiet my mind and I check in with my body, does this really hurt? Oh, it's only hurting for a second. Is it gone? Yes, it's gone. Am I fine? Yes, I'm fine. My heart says, it's okay.
Yeah.
I follow my heart. I don't follow my intuition anymore. I follow my heart, and I let my heart be the control center. But it was that book that brought me into it. I just say, listen to that book.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've listened to it like 10 times.
I'm glad you say, listen, Storytel will like it. It's the sponsor of this podcast. So, but you can read it,
Beautiful.
Of course.
Beautiful.
Okay. Awakening the Heart, which is, I'm going to read it. Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay, book number two.
Okay. I think that I should throw No Bad Parts in, since we've been talking about inner family systems. It is a little bit more scientific.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more heady, but there is great content in there.
But is it for me as just a normal guy?
A consumer,
guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we talked about this and what it gave to you. Okay.
There are so many books that I love. I was really having, I was struggling. You know, I'm that person in the restaurant. I don't just order what's on the menu. I have to make up my own.
Okay.
Okay.
You can mention four or five if you would like. But
okay. Okay. I also was talking about complex PTSD.
Yeah.
And that one definitely, there's a book called Complex PTSD. It's by Pete Walker. And I really recommend that. There's another book called The Body Keeps Score, which I think a lot of people are already familiar with.
It's a Dutch writer.
Yeah.
So,
that's
no,
essential.
When we were talking, that's the whole thing. I just thought, The Body Keeps the Score.
Know.
That's,
Yeah. I had the privilege. I was the director of business development for transformative learning programs. It sounds true. For 3 years, and they as a publisher have so many great authors.
Yeah,
and
so
I've had
you
the
met
privilege
a lot
of getting
those,
to support.
Great.
Bringing a lot of this information online. through education courses. So not with those specific authors, but with Jack Kornfield and Tara Brach for meditation, Eckhart Tolle School of Awakening, yeah. and then a few other really cool projects nice. That are aggregates of different authors. On the relationship side of things, which we haven't really delved into, no. but I will say Deeper Dating by Ken Page.
Okay.
He is brilliant, just brilliant.
And what's the essence of that book?
The essence of the book is to, in order to find your true love, you really need to start by knowing who you are.
Exactly.
And to show up with absolute confidence in who you are in the world, and then you will attract the right person for you.
You can only make a connection if you are connected with yourself.
Yes. So often it's like we're talking about the ego here. We're talking about this, you know, these different parts of ourselves that show up in the world. This happens in dating.
Mm.
So often we put out, we project one yeah. aspect of ourselves into the field yeah. and then people fall in love with that aspect. And we all know on some level that like we're like the person isn't in love with us, and that person knows they're not in love with us either. And then our hearts get broken.
Yeah.
But what's really breaking, like how I broke my own heart was by not fully trusting, like believing in who I was and putting some aspect of myself out into the world and letting that be loved instead of really waiting for it, really allowing people to love me for me. So that book is a great tool.
I was researching you a bit, Sarah, and then there suddenly was this post. So I didn't get married after all, and that was, I think, there would be a second marriage or something.
Yeah.
But it was a great post because
Thanks.
I can look it up because it was full of power to go inside and to. I don't know if I here. So I didn't get married after all, but I did make a few important vows: to fall in love with reality, not potential; to turn my devotion inward; to own every moment; to never abandon my own heart. And I've begun an epic new romance with myself.
Yes. Yes. This is true.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, great. And that you share that deeper dating. And so I'm just curious, what's the status right now?
Of me and dating?
Yeah.
Right now, my love affair is with my work and with the sanctuary.
Yeah.
But I am definitely... I took a year and a half off from dating after canceling the wedding.
Yeah.
And... I've just been thinking lately it's probably time for me to start dating again. But I'm 43 and I have two children and this beautiful work that I do. So it's a new era of dating for me, which I'm really excited about. I'm really excited to see what materializes.
Yeah.
There are a lot of different approaches to dating. I'm very, very monogamous.
yeah.
Which I always have to say up front nowadays.
Yeah.
and I'm, but yeah, I think I'm almost to the point where I can attract a partner who is far along in their healing process rather than attracting a partner who needs to heal through loss.
But on the other hand, it has to be that way. But it gives you also some other insights.
Yeah.
It's always mirroring, and I understand what you're saying when you're not connected. But in all kind of relationships, in a certain way, you helped each other always.
Yeah, I do think it's the crucible for a lot of our healing. It's a really important reflection point of where am I at right now on my journey with myself? And that's not to say we manifest or like we've manifested this horrible relationship or we deserve this horrible relationship. But it's to say that sometimes our greatest lessons come from loss. Sometimes our greatest lessons come from saying no. And sometimes we have to go really far down to places that we never thought we would go in order to come back up, in order to really feel that and choose something else consciously. And there's so much power in that.
So
I'm grateful for all of the relationships that I've had and the failures that I've had. They're just building blocks for what's next.
Do you have like a morning ritual?
Ah. Well, this is a sore point for me. I would love to have a morning ritual, but I have a 10-year-old son.
Exactly. You
have
so children,
my morning ritual, the sore point is not having a 10-year-old son. The sore point is the school system requiring me to wake up and have him at school by 7:30 in the morning because it goes against my circadian rhythms.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm constantly wrestling with it to the point where sometimes I say, I'm taking you out of school. We need to do this a different way for all of our, for our body's sake. Like, what is this system? But every day I do... I do start my day with time in nature. So after I drop my son off, I go up and spend time outdoors. To me, this is the most important thing.
To ground and to...
Even if it's only a 20-minute walk, I always go. And on a good day, I'll disappear for a couple of hours.
Yeah. Which is also kind of meditation, of course.
Yes.
Yeah. And do you have like an evening routine?
I've been working on, my therapist said to me one time, she said, many years ago, I said, I'm struggling with my bedtime routine. I hear all of these people have such good, what's the word when you consistently do things all of the time?
Routine or what?
They have the ability to, I'll think of it in a minute, but it's clearly not one of my words. Just not one I use to describe myself. But it'll come to me. Sorry about that. I'm going to move back a little bit. Okay, so I was struggling with my bedtime routine for a long time. Like, how do I wind myself down at the end of the day? And I was struggling with insomnia. I was really challenged to fall asleep. And I was trying all of the things that require discipline. I was following the protocols.
And
I was I had the wearables. I was tracking it all. I was doing all the good biohacker things. And none of it was working. A good cup of chamomile tea was like my best bet to get myself to go to bed. But my brilliant therapist, she said, Sarah, what if you just start imagining that you're the mother and you start tucking yourself in at night?
That's so nice.
Of all the hacks, that was the one. So my bedtime routine is I tuck myself in. Sometimes I sing myself a song.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. And we haven't talked about Dragonfly, what it is. It's... I saw on the website new approach to health and wellness. So if you can dream big, what is Dragonfly doing over 10 years?
Dragonfly is going to transform health and healthcare. It's going to transform the healthcare system. I'm launching the platform in three phases. The first phase is focused on what we call patient literacy, AKA health education.
Yeah.
Right now in this right now in the world, you go to health class when you're young. They tell you there are girls and boys, birds and bees. then they check back in with you in high school, you know, to say, now make sure that you're very careful with all of this.
Yeah.
And then they send you off. And a lot of people end up in healthcare in a crisis with their health because we were never educated about how to take care of ourselves. And so we go to the doctor, we go to our healer practitioner, and now the burden is on the practitioner to educate us. And this is unrealistic for practitioners. And when you're in crisis, it's the worst time to try to learn anything. We all know how the nervous system works. This isn't great. It's not a great scenario. And so often, I'm sure we've all experienced this, you start to Google it, you start to look up, what does this mean? And it's like the worst catastrophe, and you're suddenly even more freaked out. The first part of the platform is health education, preventative health education, all kinds of really juicy information about diet, fascial healing, kind of cutting edge things that you can do to really take care of yourself. And... there is information in there about gut health and healing that requires supplements. And there are other protocols that require kind of things outside of yourself, some technology, but in general, it's low tech. It's a lot of the preventative health. If we're proactive, we don't need all of those interventions. So it's, what can I do at home daily? And I'm not overly disciplined, and I'm not a person that believes that the same thing will work tomorrow that's working today. So there's a lot of room inside of the education on the platform for people to play. We're getting ready to launch a membership and a subscription where every week we will introduce a new expert, and they will have a micro journey or a foundational journey that's a building block, just like 30 minutes where you can learn something new and apply it to your life. And they'll also have a transformational journey that's 30 days where you can implement something into your life with deeper engagement and support from the teacher. So just trying to keep it fresh, keep it interesting, and acknowledge that things are changing. The second stage of the platform is going to be to connect people with healers. So right now there are a lot of independent healthcare practitioners out there.
Like a marketplace kind of thing.
Yes, two-sided marketplace, like Uber or Airbnb, but for alternative healthcare.
Yeah.
Why doesn't this exist? I don't know, but now that I realize this is a problem, I have to solve it.
Oh,
so
right.
I'm solving that.
Yeah.
And then the third phase of the platform will be to go completely into the Web3 space with a currency and an economy. All based on an exchange, all based where health is the currency, and it will all be based on outcomes. So what the practitioners are earning more when they get good outcomes from their patients. It's so backwards right now. The incentives are not aligned. So we're gonna align incentives and build abundance and wealth for all people around health.
Yeah, okay. It's I love the idea, but on the other hand, we said this before, the body has to heal itself, and of course people can help, but if you don't if you don't do it yourself, a teacher, healer,
let's talk about this is good. Do we have time for me to talk about this?
Great.
So fundamentally, so I was thinking about this. I'm reading the research, and I'm seeing all of these different facts, like 75% of chronic conditions can be avoided through simple changes to lifestyle.
Yeah.
I'm seeing that 10% of the global GDP is spent on healthcare. These don't match up. We're spending a ton of money, 10% of the global GDP. In the US, it's 18% of our GDP. We're spending $9 trillion globally on healthcare. And yet we have, it's, the statistics vary, but even in the best of situations, I think it's like 1 out of 3 people suffer from chronic conditions. And there are statistics that look much worse, I think in part because it varies depending on where you are in the world. But So we have a massive problem here. Yeah. We're allocating all of this money towards system that is broken. Clearly it's not working. And then I'm like, well, what is the broken part? And I'm looking at this thing keeps standing out to me. 75% of the time, you don't even have to have this issue if you change your lifestyle.
So
I'm like, okay, that's it. But then I'm thinking, okay. Why, if it's this simple, I'm obviously, like, other people are seeing that this is the World Health Organization releasing this information. Really smart people are looking at this. So what's the problem?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Why aren't we making these changes? And I do have gripes with corporations. I have gripes with the food industry. I have all kinds of complaints about the big guys that are not taking care of things. But ultimately, like we're talking about here, it's up to us as individuals. So it's like, when I look at this on the individual level, why aren't we changing? And I go back to my roots in psychology. And one day it came to me. I was thinking about, I was looking at the model of behavior change. I'm like, this is, okay, the key word here is change. We have to change our behaviors. And inside of all of this, that is the problem, change. Change is not easy. So this is what we need to work on, is supporting people through a change process. So then I realized, oh, there are all these psychologists that have been studying this for a long time. And it's there is a theory of behavior change, which stems from addiction recovery models. And it tells us that there are very distinct phases of behavior change.
Yeah.
So what we have going on right now in the health industry, in the health field, is an enormous gap where we acknowledge that change needs to occur, but we are not midwifing people through a process to help them change their behaviors and their lifestyles in a preventative, proactive way. So we gear this, like, there's a little bit of danger in saying it's all, like, for me, I'm out saying it's change happens from within.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of danger to that. Because it could imply that you're just supposed to know how to do it and you're just supposed to get it done.
No,
and what's
that's
wrong
the
with
other.
You for
no,
not
yeah.
making these changes? Like, why aren't you getting it? We become hard on ourselves. We're failing. And this yeah. is, you know, negative reinforcement is not the way to encourage no. Behavior change.
No.
It's all about positive reinforcement. So first of all, people have to come to awareness. The first step is a wake-up call. Oftentimes now, right now, it's a crisis because we're so backwards in our system. But it could be yourself. It could be a lover or a friend or a relative. Someone that you care about is in crisis. Now we've had a wake-up call. Something needs to change. But once you have that awareness, that doesn't equal change. That's just the first step. The next yeah. step is you start searching. You start inquiring out into the world to look for solutions. And you start dabbling in different things. And you start to learn what works and what doesn't. It's like, that's what this conference is all about yeah. here at the Biohackers Summit, is to give people exposure to all these things. And people are going to go home and try
yeah,
it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And different people will have different results on different days at different times of day. And they will decide for themselves what they like, what they don't like. And over time, you start to amass the things that really work for you. Then you start. So now you're experiencing change.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of like a honeymoon phase.
Yeah, yeah. So you can get a downfall to the old life.
That's right. What addiction recovery reminds us is that we have this thing called relapse.
Yeah.
So all of our best intentions. I mean, I've told you about my personal story. I needed yeah. to cut out sugar to reduce inflammation in my body. But there are days when, like, I'm out. Like, the other night, I had a dinner and you were there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they served this amazing dessert. Did you stay for
no,
dessert?
No, then I was already gone to the radio then.
I knew you had to go.
Yeah.
But, well, I...
You
I,
had mine, I guess. Extra.
I had my dessert plus yours. I definitely ate sugar that night, right? Yeah. So this is where true transformation and real change begins to happen. This is the most important moment mm-hmm. on the trajectory of change is when we actually fail. It's yeah. when we have we don't do the thing we committed to doing, or when we did all the things that we thought were supposed to work and something still isn't right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's having support. It's having practitioners. It's having other people in the community, friends, people to tell you, yeah. you stay on the
sure,
path.
Yeah.
Here's another alternative. And it's when you fundamentally make the decision to stick with it and keep going, and then you succeed, that's when it locks into your system.
That's the moment the diet
you're
changed
the
in a new lifestyle. Yeah,
yeah, that's yeah. when that's when we start to have really empowered people
yeah.
who... Ultimately, then the last step in the behavior change model is you become a teacher, basically. You
exactly,
become
yeah.
a person who wants to be a steward of this information and share it with the world. So the whole foundation of Dragonfly is built on this recognition and honoring of the idea that different people are going to be at different places
yes.
on their health journey at different
and
times.
Health.
And we all, I just like, if I could have nothing else come through this interview, is the idea of being patient with ourselves, like to be patient because, and to acknowledge the little wins and to keep going because change takes time and change is
yeah.
a process.
Trust the process.
Trust the process.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
And you can't do it alone. So studies
yeah.
do show, by the way, that the difference, like ultimately your health outcomes do rely on community.
Yeah.
And the reason they rely on community is because you do need support in those moments of relapse or down times to uphold you. So surrounding yourself by other people who share the same values is key. It's another reason why I love this conference
yeah.
and why I am partnering with the Biohackers Summit and why I've created the Sanctuary and
yeah.
the NFT project that's coming out of that is to build community so that we can all find each other and stick with each other. And that is also on the platform. We have a membership
yeah.
and a community and a social media thingy
beautiful.
thing.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Are you afraid of death?
Oh, ooh. No.
No.
I'm not afraid of death, but I also am very sure that I'm going to live a very long time.
Okay. And what do you think will happen? This is like... a weird spiritual question because we don't know.
Yeah.
But of course, you thought about it or read about it or whatever. So what do you think will happen?
After I die, what will happen?
Yeah.
I believe that we're all infinite and that the things that I've cultivated in my life will carry on through the people that I've loved and who have loved me in their hearts, that there is like an energy exchange happening every day, like ongoing, and that those aspects of myself that I'm giving to the world will stay and continue to flourish. I do believe in past lives, so therefore I suppose I must believe that I will come back in some form.
Yeah, with that energy.
I will
energy
reassemble myself
yeah.
in some form. When I say I believe in past lives, I think I'm more of the epigenetic. I think we can tap into our DNA. So I think I'm actually going to stick with the, I think that I will live on through my children and through my lineage. And through the work that I do.
Of course. And that's my last question. How would you like to be remembered? And of course, your children will say a mother full of love, which is great and the most important thing in life. But I mean it more as Sarah Glynn, founder of Dragonfly and all the things you did and will be doing.
Yeah.
How do you want to be remembered?
I would like to be remembered as someone who created a lot of abundance for the people, a lot of abundance for health healers and healthcare practitioners. I think that this group, I know that this is the tribe that is assembling to create the shift that is needed in the world. I'd like to be remembered as someone who contributed to saving this planet.
Wow. That's great. Sarah, thank you so much for your time and for what you are doing. I think you definitely have to write a book someday. because it's sharing your story is healing for a lot of people. That's what Dragonfly is about, of course. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Sarah Glynn. Ik vind het echt grappig hoe we hier juist op de Biohacker Summit gewoon een hele spirituele gesprekken hebben. Dat gaat dus mooi hand in hand samen. Fijn dat we hebben benoemd. Ik ben benieuwd naar de reacties. Laat het vooral weten onderin bij YouTube. Je kan natuurlijk ook een recensie achterlaten. Dat gebeurt de laatste tijd wat minder. Maar doe dat alsjeblieft bij Spotify. Een paar sterren geven en iets. Nou ja, afijn. Doe iets. Maak wat van je dag. Dit was Koekeroe. Tot de volgende zonnegroet. Hoi. Ja, voordat je weggaat. Je hebt het hele gesprek uitgezeten. Heb je jezelf al aangemeld? Zo ja, top. Dan heb ik er zin in. En dan, voelen we elkaar 1 mei? Zo niet. Nou, trouwens, het is iets eerder dan 1 mei, bedenk ik me nu, want we hebben nog een inkomweekend. Afijn, dat wordt allemaal duidelijk. Als je denkt, waar gaat dit over? Meditatie. Van 1 tot 10 mei. Elke ochtend en elke avond samen even inchecken. En samen even zitten. Jij thuis, ik thuis. En fantastische experts die ons begeleiden. Het zijn er meer dan 20 en ik ga ze echt niet weer allemaal opnoemen. Oh, er wordt geweld. Maar meld je aan. Dat is eigenlijk wat ik nog even wilde zeggen. Koekeroe.nl/meditatie